Hello and welcome to Scoppy Radio. My name is Daniel Johansson.
And I'm Maureen Smith.
Joined today by Joshua Lewis Smith.
Hello.
QIO host.
I'm going to scooch my chair closer. It's going to be loud.
Tenor of the year, Josh Smith.
Well, oh, that's me.
Yeah. How are you?
I'm pretty good. I made one of those cauliflower crust pizzas.
I saw that. Is that the new camera on your new phone?
Yes, it is.
Because it came out so gorgeous.
It's, yeah.
The aesthetic of it, yeah.
Yeah, no, I like the camera on that. But yeah, I made the cauliflower crust pizza, and none of my friends' complaints were true. Like, it was not, people said it would be soggy, it wasn't soggy, people said it wouldn't, it was crisp. One of my friends was like, oh God, it's so chewy. Was not chewy. What I will say is, it tasted like it put a bunch of shit on top of cauliflower, which I like cauliflower, but that's not exactly what you want when you get the pizza experience.
No.
But I tried it.
Yeah.
That's where I'm at.
It looked like a well-lit room, too.
The kitchen? Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah, I was very jealous. I was like, oh, I wish I had that nice natural lighting of that or whatever room that was.
Yeah. I get pretty good light in my apartment. Yeah.
It had like a beauty food blogger thing going to it.
Yeah,
like somebody's Instagram somebody Instagramming the Starbucks frappuccino.
Oh god,
I saw some in the wild the other day and I was like, oh,
wild.
Someone brought a fucking unicorn bullshit into my job yesterday and I was like, you're in a fancy coffee place, why are you bringing that nonsense? I'm offended by that unicorn.
Well, I have a lot of feelings about it. I'm sure you do too. But my question is, does anyone here know what it's actually supposed to be flavored?
It's supposed to be sour.
What?
Supposed to be sour. Like, when you first start drinking it, it's sweet, and then you, like, shake it up, and it's sour.
What?
Yeah.
That is America.
Like, why? Like, it's supposed to be, like, and it's intentionally supposed to be sour.
You know what? Okay, so here's the thing to me. It's like the
Josh
difference
Josh is, like, reeling.
Like, American culinary practice and, like, Japanese culinary practice where they, like, really get into, like, balancing all... Well, just Asian in general of, like, balancing all these different flavor types.
No,
and, like, finding them naturally versus just, like, extracting the essence of sour from corn.
Yeah. I'm just imagining, like, a giant Sour Patch Kid and... Truth be told, I love Sour Patch Kids, but
I don't want to drink a 12-ounce Sour Patch Kid.
No, I do not.
Yeah.
You know what? My main issue is, like, when, like, I want to fast forward to 6 months from now to when we all look back and wonder why the fuck everything was unicorn in beginning of 2017.
I actually have a theory about this, and it's because of the fact that everything is terrible. Like, there are a lot of people that don't necessarily know how to grasp the world and so are latching onto, like, what it was like to be 5 or 10. And everything was just, like, bright colors and sugar and, like, sweetness and, like, you know. And
I think
it's
just gay appropriation. I think
people are trying to... Yeah. That's probably it.
So I very much want to have a conversation that's not going to end up in an agreement. Which is the ellipses conversation.
Yeah, except that I think that we're going to sway you.
Well, no. Okay, so I will say...
You pretty much said before we started recording that we were going to sway you.
Well, no. I mean, I...
All right.
I do have a point where I will stand my ground on a topic, I think. But I do think what we were realizing as this conversation was going on was that I very much am the type of person... that will look at something and, like, hard line an extreme opinion on it and be like, this is my stance. And then have people, like, aggressively be like, no. And then I, like, I live for that. And I think that's where I find out where I really think about a thing. And I think that's kind of where we were talking about with... I posted at So let me also preface by saying, I wrote this Facebook status at 1 o'clock, like a weird Donald Trump tweet. And I was like... I said something like,
oh, 1 a.m.?
Yeah, it was a weird time. And I like went to bed. I was like, I'm probably going to want to delete that in the morning. And then I woke up and, like, there were like 10 comments on it. And a lot of people that agreed with me, a lot of people that disagreed with me. And I basically was just like, I think we all need to formally decide to evolve away from using ellipses.
Which
I think also I got to say too, I like the part of the humor of it for me was the fact that it was such a like formally, I don't know. I mean, it was a weird Daniel 1 o'clock in the morning humor. But so But I think where I'm really coming at is I just think it's extremely overused. And I think there are uses for it, but I think there are ways to work around it. And I think that that's valuable.
See, okay. So, but the way that you're proposing that we work around it is like I posed to you, we were walking to go get lunch, and I posed to you, like, what if you want to express that you're pausing before you say something?
Yeah.
Like, dot, 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 why?
Yeah. Which is that's a good question. And that's actually a really good usage of it. And I think when I didn't even realize that was a usage of it, because I'm so used to seeing ellipses in the way that I'm talking about it and getting frustrated. And I don't notice that that's ellipses, which is foolish of me. And part of the reason why, like, I'm just wrong originally. Remember when you were like, you're just going to get swayed.
Yeah.
That was really fast.
And so my original thought was like, there are, I also will not concede that there are workarounds. Like, I was saying that you could use an emoji and be like, emoji, why? And which is also...
But are you going to, I'm pro the evolution of language, because that is language, or like, English is a living language, so it should change. But are you suggesting that, like, novelists should put emojis in their books?
That's what I was saying,
wait a minute. If you're going to talk about novelists, if you're talking about a novel, I actually do agree with my original thought, in that I think that if you're writing a novel, what you're trying to say in a dot, dot, dot can much be better explained in one clause,
but
before or after.
I'm
going to
defend the use of ellipses as trailing off in a sentence, and I'm going to keep defending it, because it's the most elegant way of doing it without every other sentence being, and then Samantha trailed off.
But I also think that trailing off doesn't happen as often in a novel as you think it would.
No, it doesn't. But I will say, as someone who worked in transcription for a very long time, when trying to write down speech patterns as truthfully as possible, I wouldn't want to do it without ellipses, especially because it's a good way to indicate someone trailed off. It's a good way someone kind of trailed off, and then someone else starts a sentence, because if you use a hyphen, it's going to indicate that they got cut off instead of them trailing off.
Yeah.
It really is helpful in capturing how people speak.
Yeah. No, and I concede that one, definitely, because that I worked a little bit in transcription, and I totally understand that, and I don't really know. There isn't, especially because when it's transcription, you're trying to get the actual crux of what was verbally said in as few things as possible.
So is your objection to the use of ellipses limited to people being passive aggressive with their use of ellipses?
I don't like when people use ellipses at the end of a sentence when they can't come up with anything clever to say. And just don't say
it. Well, that's fair. That's kind of my thought. I have no objection to that.
Yeah.
That's kind of my thought. And, like, I also get...
Can you give me an example? Sorry to put you on the spot.
You should turn in this paper by Friday, dot, dot, dot. Which what you're trying to say is, you should turn in this paper by Friday or I'll fail you. But you're afraid to say that. That's kind of my thought. And that's a stupid example. But my point is like, kind of anything like that where it's like quasi-threatening. But that's the problem, is like, either be threatening or don't be threatening. And that's kind of I don't know if that even makes sense, but like...
It's
passive-aggressive authority.
And that's an interesting thing, is like, when you're in a...
Sorry.
Oh my god.
Oh my god, I thought this thing was on vibrate. I have a new phone, guys. It's very confusing.
No, that's okay.
The sound is... off now.
You get one interruption, Josh.
No, I'm just kidding. That was your one.
That was my one.
You can have five.
Thank you.
We'll go get the chalkboard, because we have to mark, the interruption. I think that's an interesting thing, is the idea of passive-aggressive authority.
Because that's not authority.
Well, no. I mean, it's someone in a position of authority who doesn't quite know what to do with it.
Yes. I would agree.
Yeah. I think that probably Donald Trump would be a fan of the ellipses.
Yeah, and I guess that's the thing, is like, I'm recognizing more and more that like, the reason why I have certain stances on certain things is because... I'm just frustrated with like the undereducated nature of our society, and that there are just so many people in the world that are so poorly undereducated that they don't even realize that they're using something wrong. And like ellipses especially are one of those things that's just like so frequently misused. And then there are obviously legitimate uses of it, but I feel like from my perspective, I see them so infrequently that it's really easy for me to be like, what?
No, sorry. It's just that you have a similar view of the semicolon.
We've also had... I actually am probably not going to waver on my thoughts on semicolons.
I literally have one tattooed to my body.
I know you do. And, like, I think... So here's my thing with semicolons. I think in most cases you can either use a comma or a period.
No.
So why do you... What's your case for needing a semicolon?
Okay, no, my case for basically all punctuation is that we're living in a world dominated by written communication right now, right? Mm-hmm. And how often do you hear someone say, oh God, no, I didn't mean it that way. I just, you know, the tone, emails and stuff. But I think that through use of proper punctuation, it's not a fail-safe, but really we can indicate a lot of tone ellipses too. And also, the Oxford comma, I think living in an age of written communication, the Oxford comma is the most important thing, and the fact that people don't like it is ridiculous to me.
I agree. I definitely see the merit in the Oxford comma.
My mom doesn't like the Oxford comma. And I kind of want her to have us... I kind of want her to write in and tell us why.
Can you call her right now?
Can I call her right
now? Yeah. You'd be like, we have you on the show. And then I want to talk about semicolons.
We can talk more about semicolons, yes. And we should.
Semicolons is I feel like... I agree with you about having options and like being able to infer inflection. I don't think semicolon has anything distinguishing about it. Am I wrong in saying that? Like, I have spent time trying to understand, like, what... Because I've felt this way about semicolons for a while. But there's not... And that's the other thing, too, is, like, I got it from reading a lot of Vonnegut, because he's super anti-semicolon and, like, openly anti-semicolon, like, in his novels. Because it's... For me, it's if you're not able to differentiate in the writing that these two thoughts that you're putting together in a sentence are separate thoughts, like it's just not strong writing. And that's just my personal
opinion. But they're separate but related thoughts, and that's why I use a semicolon. And it's, I don't, to me, saying we shouldn't use semicolons is saying like, oh, well, you know, artists shouldn't use gray. I don't know. It is a color. And when you're creating beautiful... And I don't think that everyone has to use it, but I do think that it's an option. And I do think that written word can be beautiful.
Yeah.
And you get rid of some of that beauty and some of the flow of sentences when you get rid of a semicolon.
Well, I also think the thing with semicolons is that they're misused by people that treat it like a colon, which is frustrating to me.
But misuse is different than...
But then if it's frequently misused, and I personally feel like you're much better off if you're trying to say that these two clauses are related, right? Like, I feel like you're much better off being, like, making that clear in your writing.
So, I have my mom... Yeah. On the line. So we're right now talking about semicolons. Daniel is anti-semicolon. How do you feel about semicolons?
I use semicolons daily.
Yes!
And for context, my mom is a writer.
Yeah.
So like...
So I write for business.
Yeah.
I write for business-to-business publications. And I use a semicolon when I want to extend a thought in a single sentence, when I have two ideas that are connected, but I want there to be more of a pause between parts of the idea, or I want there to be a pause between sort of the seed of the idea and then the extension of the idea.
That's really interesting. And I actually, for me, I think actually it weirdly ties into paragraph length.
Yeah, I agree. And I'll also go back after I write something and take semicolons out and realize that it would be better to just split those two ideas further apart. But, yeah.
Well, what was the punctuation that you were like?
Oxford comma.
So I know that, so you and I, Mom, have had conversations about the Oxford comma, and I know that it comes up at work a lot, that there's someone who's like staunchly, like, who sees no reason to never not use the Oxford comma, and you object to that.
Oh, I do object to that. And this isn't something that I'm super passionate about, but I do. So the way I feel about this is I feel like the final and in a series serves as a comma. And although sometimes it is true, and we've all seen those examples of how the addition of the Oxford comma will change a meaning. And in those situations, I do put it in. I think part of it has to do with the fact that most of my writing is a more journalistic style, and I believe that AP style, which is like Chicago style or MLA style, mm-hmm. it's just your style of writing, does not call for the Oxford comma. So, because that's the structure under which I typically write, I don't usually use it.
So Josh is like not shaking and then nodding. And so I'm interested in what you have to say about it.
No, I think those were very valid thoughts. Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, I will say that it makes sense to me not using the Oxford comma when you're quoting someone that's not writing what they're saying.
I think it depends on what they're saying.
When it's an actual verbal sentence that someone is saying.
No, I still think it depends on what they're saying.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not in all cases. I'm saying, I guess what I'm saying is, like, in this moment, I feel like it's the not use of an Oxford comma is contingent on a person not. What am I saying?
Mom, what do you think?
I've never thought of it that way. So that's a new idea. I'd have to look. I'm not sure how a verbal, an audio quote that you've transcribed onto the written page. I don't know how the Oxford comma is there or not there. Mm. I've never thought of it that way. The other thing I've noticed at work, at my workplace, so I'm 57 years old, so I've been writing, you know, for 50 years or something like that, and sort of grew up without the Oxford comma, and we have someone in our office who is, I think, 24 or 25, and he was taught at his college to use the Oxford comma. So I don't know if it's an age thing or a... who taught you to write thing? I'm not exactly sure.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah, I don't think I learned to write with the Oxford comma.
I'm actually trying to think of a good example of when it doesn't change the meaning.
Right.
Because I feel like it, when you have a list of things, doesn't it always change the meaning?
I don't think so.
Not always?
There's always the example is I went to the store.
I went to the store and I got apples, comma, oranges, comma.
That's true. That's how it.
Apples, comma, oranges, and bananas. And I don't think there's a difference there.
Yeah, unless there was like a product called oranges and bananas or something.
That's the thing, though. Well, there could be, in theory, like theoretically, like.
Yeah, in theory, and if there's ever any question that not putting in the comma would make this would affect the meaning negatively, yeah. I put it in.
Yeah. Which I think is at least the baseline rule to go by. For humanity. Like, yeah. I think we should just, we can formally agree on that.
For clarity's sake, it's so easy.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But if someone wants to use the extra comma, they should.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Go for it. Use it.
Do you have any thoughts? I'm sorry.
It doesn't cost nothing.
Yeah. Do you have any thoughts on ellipses?
Oh my God.
Oh. Well, I will say that I saw the Facebook post today. So I noticed a lot of the opinions and I thought there were a lot of good points made.
Yeah, I agree.
Daniel, where you said that when you're quoting someone and there's a pause in their speech pattern, to use the ellipses there is good. Or if you're leaving something out of a quote and you put, you know, right. Those are functional ellipses.
Yeah.
Uses, and those make a lot of sense. What I'm not a big fan of is a comment that ends with ellipses. It's usually that it seems to me that it's because the person doesn't want to take a stand.
That's exactly what we were saying. Yes. Yeah. We were calling it passive aggressive authority.
Yeah, or that they don't want to be seen as being definitive, closed minded,
or like the heavy.
Or what?
Or like the heavy. Like they don't want to be the layer down of the law.
Yeah, and a lot of times what I've noticed that I do in online commentary is just not put any punctuation at all at the end of my last comment.
Yeah,
I do that too, and I think for me it really mimics, because I think when I'm online or on Facebook or whatever, I find myself trying to mimic like how I talk in the real world, and a lot of times I feel like I don't know when a sentence I'm saying is going to end or not, and I feel like not putting a period there is kind of that for me.
Yeah, that could be. I'm not sure why I do that. I don't know why I do it, but I've noticed that I do it. And also, if I'm writing and I have a series of bullet points, if it's a more casual written thing, I will sometimes not put. And if it's not more than one sentence, I will usually not put a period at the end of whatever I write in a bullet point list.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, because Daniel's original stance was that they should never be used ever.
I've learned something about myself today in that I will go to that extreme to make a point and then really enjoy when everybody's like, well, you know, what about transcription or, yeah.
Yeah, right. There are very few things in life that are so definitive that I'll say, I will never ...
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I think that's, I think that's something in my life that I've gained through Daniel is someone in my life who's not afraid to go to that extreme.
Well, that's what you should do.
Yeah.
Make someone or not.
Yeah. Well, cool. Well, thank you for weighing in on grammar on our extremely thrilling podcast.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
Yeah. You'll be able to hear yourself on the podcast waves on Monday morning.
Great.
Yeah.
All right. Cool. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. Have fun.
All right. Thanks. Bye.
Bye. Bye. Cool. All right. So let's move on.
I have to say one more thing about the semicolon, though. It's very important when you're making lists that have commas.
Yeah.
If you're talking about... Yeah.
That is a legitimate usage.
So, you know...
And that is
something that I brought up to you before.
In such places as Gary, Indiana, semicolon. Milwaukee, yeah. Wisconsin, semicolon. Chicago, Illinois. Those are very important semicolons.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I do. That, I think... I mean, like, me personally, I will probably never use a semicolon except in that case.
They're important, and they're pretty. They're very pretty in a sentence.
They're very aesthetically pleasing, which I like, I think.
But also, I think the way that they make a sentence flow, well, a paragraph flow, is very...
Oh, nice. See, and I think that's the thing, is it kind of breaks up a sentence for me.
Oh, for me, it breaks up less than a period would.
Really?
Yeah.
A period ends the sentence.
It visually breaks a sentence for me.
I think that doesn't bother me at all. I think of it more... No, for me, I'm like, periods are... Sometimes I think if you use too many periods or too many commas, things get very clunky looking. And mm-hmm. this is just a way to alleviate some of that. Because I understand the need for them. So it kind of like is another way to get it without being... Period. Period. Period.
Yeah. Less declamatory.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, hey, write in about your thoughts, please. We'll read them on air. Clearly, we have a lot as well.
This is the most, like, tame,
well, so
questionable internet opinion ever.
Joaquin Lewis sent us a listener mail, though, which I'm really excited about, and will get us a little out of the tame area, because it's basically an article about Dame Judi Dench being low-key socialist as fuck.
Yeah, I loved it.
Which I'm so here for.
So, let's read his email first.
Yeah. Sorry.
You talk quickly, so I'm going to read it. All right. Hi, QIOers. Came across this article and thought you all, winky face, would be interested in it. Aside from the title, I thought this quote was interesting. A lot of us don't go into this profession because we think we're going to earn a lot of money or become famous. We do it because we love it and we're passionate about it. We're as passionate as people who want to teach or become nurses. If you don't invest in people's training, it's going to have such a huge effect on not only our theater industry, but also our culture. Always listening, Joachim Laus.
Which is my pet name for Joachim, and when he and I and Aaron Maul all started Opera on Tap, in my MC bit, I like made up names for them that were not their names, and I made up one for myself. So it's Joachim Laus, E. Ryan Mollet, and Daniil Johnson.
Cool.
Which I'm really about that. Anyway, he also linked to that article, which I thought was interesting that she talked, because she talked a bit about how she was getting a lot of emails from people in acting school. That couldn't afford acting school, basically asking for it. And she was like, there's something you know, that we as like privileged people that have been working in the theater for a long time can do. Like, and she said, I guess she said that she has done that to some extent, but at a certain point, it's
you can't...
clearly a wealth divide issue.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Something that she mentioned, and this is something that Josh and I talked a little bit about before we started recording, was that she mentioned some prominent British and she's talking about England specifically.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That she mentioned some actors like Eddie Redmayne, Benedict Cumberbatch, Tom Hiddleston, I think, was another one mm-hmm. on the list,
yep.
that all come from public schooling, who have managed to still break into acting.
Yes.
Mm. And like, I think that she was kind of identifying those as kind of like the new wave of like lower crust actors. Mm. Whereas the generation before, it was mostly people who like went to prep school and then like went to Cambridge. Like mm-hmm. that's like where Emma Thompson and, and like Alan Rickman and
interesting
Stephen Fry, they all met at Cambridge.
Yeah.
And so, you know, then you have Eddie Redmayne, and I think that she said that Eddie Redmayne went to Eton, which I think is a public school in England.
What I do know is that it was another thing that was interesting about it was that she was talking about a bit about the decline of repertory theater.
Yes.
Which is which she said has made it extremely difficult to see or attend plays that are kind of like classics and not classics but just like standbys of the theater, you know, I guess classics. Yeah. But like and just the entire production nature. I'm paraphrasing. I should actually read the quote. She would reinstall reps all over the country, but knows this is impractical, though she does not believe that government has to choose between hospitals and theater. In a civilized country, there's money for both. She accepts that talented aspiring actors can make it without going to drama school, but it's a hard and rocky road, she added. Her comments follow those of Ben Stevenson, the BBC's controller of drama commissioning, said acting had become too much of a middle-class profession. He argued that entry was too expensive for those from disadvantaged backgrounds. I want to find the part. Those schools include Eton. No, they don't say if it's a public school or private school. Yeah. Or not, sorry.
No, it's fine. I think that's an interesting comment, just, you know, as far as something that we've talked about in the past, and actually something that you're thinking of writing an article about, is that, you know, how can theater become more financially accessible for people to attend?
Yeah, and I mean, it's hard, right? Because, like, especially when you're making art in a city like Chicago, I'm trying to find, listeners at home, you'll be able to do this much faster than I will. If you remember in any interview that I've given, that we've done, when I've asked the question, when you're working in a city like Chicago and your audience is all mostly low-income singers or performers that can't really afford it, how do you actually make the project work?
I feel like Claire might have talked about that.
I think Baroque did too. Yeah, I went through a good amount of them, and I was trying to find it, and it's, you know, it's hard going through 40 of them. But I mean, if anybody has memory of, like, they were listening to their podcast while they were in the car and they saw, like, somebody get mugged at the same time as listening to me talk about, ask this question, please let me know, because, like, that would be awesome.
Not that someone got mugged, but no, that you remember.
Yeah, sorry. Sorry, that person. So the other quote that I was thinking of was, Edward Kemp is the artistic director of the Royal Academy of Dramatic Art, and he said that he also spoke of a serious worry since the loss of repertory theater. For those outside London, he said, the chances of being exposed to really good theater is getting squeezed. Facilities for drama in most private schools way outstrip any state school. So, yeah, it's just kind of talking about this, like, being exposed to it is a serious issue at this point, because you're not going to further the craft if people outside of the city aren't exposed to it.
Well, and I think that, you know, cities that do have repertory theaters, you do see a difference. Yeah. Like, Chicago has Steppenwolf, and Milwaukee has the Milwaukee Repertory Theater. And there is, in both of those cities, those are the two cities that I've lived in and have actually been involved in outside endeavors. Like, I lived in Baltimore, but I only did things in school. And I also, I don't think they have a repertory theater, but Milwaukee and Chicago both do. And there is this deeply ingrained tradition of, like, people being season ticket holders and school trips to the Milwaukee Rep and workshops at the Milwaukee Rep. And I know that there's a similar tradition in Chicago. And I think that, you know, in cities that don't have that, it's really lacking. And there's less of a wellspring of young talent coming out of, you know, out of those traditions. And I think that he's right, that people who don't get exposed to that repertory theater environment miss out on that.
Yeah.
I've talked a lot about how I think it's really miraculous how many talented individuals come out of Milwaukee.
Yeah.
A lot of our guests have been friends of mine from Milwaukee. And now that I'm sitting here thinking about it, I'm like, well, yeah, of course a lot of talented people are coming out of Milwaukee, because there are these really strong institutions that provide a lot of outreach, and, you know, but yeah.
They just both looked at me expectantly at the same time. It was a lot of pressure. No, I mean, I'd be curious to learn more about the repertory traditions in England and how they might even differ than ours, because I'm sure it's not exactly the same thing.
Yeah.
But I do think that it's important, right? But also, that being said, growing up on Long Island, we didn't really have any repertory theaters, but the sheer amount of theater we had was overwhelming. I mean, and that clearly a lot of performers come from Long Island.
Yeah. Well, and I think that part of that is the connection to New York.
Right. I think that's it.
Whereas, I think it's a different animal. I think it's because it's just a train ride into the city.
But whereas we might be talking, Right, whereas it's some poor town in the middle of nowhere.
Milwaukee
right.
or something. Like, there's no reason that so many talented people should be coming out of Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And I think it's only because there are these
And I'm sure that does breed, you know, want to take part in that.
Yeah.
Oh, I was going to... Sorry. I wanted to wrap up, and I was going to do that by... transitioning into plugging Boy I'm tonight, but I was like, it's literally tonight. If you sorry you missed it if you haven't gone so I'm in the show tonight, Boem. What I was gonna say is that what's been really cool about that, and what I was thinking about with this, is I just think there needs to be, when you put it up, when you can put things up in spaces where it wouldn't normally go, if you, and then, you know, leave the doors open to some extent, and leave, let it kind of fill out into the public and reach people. We keep the door open because otherwise there are parts, our entrances come from outside, so we actually have to like go through an alleyway to get to the entrance. And so we leave the door open so we can, so like when I don't miss Mimi dying.
Yeah.
So
spoiler alert.
Yeah. Spoiler, Mimi dies.
Mimi dies, yeah. It's an opera.
If you haven't heard, if you haven't seen Bohem or Rent.
No, Mimi lives in Rent.
Mimi lives in Rent.
Does she?
She comes back to life.
Well, she doesn't... Yeah, I mean, yeah, more
yeah,
or less.
Yeah, she loses consciousness, and
then she
like,
wakes up.
Yeah.
Anyway. sorry for that.
Anyway.
Don't worry about it.
The door's
oh, but I
open.
Think that I think that there's something really powerful about that. And I mean, like, that's the thing. Like, last night, we had 10 or 20 people. Well, I mean, it's cool when you're sitting outside waiting for your entrance because you get to see everybody kind of react. And just people that walked past and stopped and looked, there was at least... 50 people in a 2-hour period that stopped, definitely.
That's great.
And then as far as like people that are trying to, we had at least 10 or 20 people try to get into the show. And so you can't like that, you can't bat an eye at that.
No.
In fact, not only that, we have to have someone like guarding, because we had a guy come in last night drunk and sit on the stage. He just like sat and we couldn't
do
anything. It was act 2. It was like when all the hustle and bustle's going on. It's like we couldn't. There was nothing we could do. The guy was there. And so we did the whole rest of the act with this guy sitting on the stage. And I mean, but there's something, I mean, sure, it's weird. And it, you're like, oh, fuck, this kind of makes my blocking weird. But like, whatever. There's something magical and powerful about that of like actually seeing this thing affect people and actually... You know, and even just the intimacy of grassroots small theater, of just like having it right there. So, you know what? I'm not going to plug one. What I am going to plug is people that are making stuff, people that are working on stuff, fuck the lyric and fucking make small stuff. Make small things happen in spaces that it wouldn't happen normally, because that we need more of that. And it,
absolutely.
And it's,
oh, yes,
it's,
we
it
do.
Will only promote more of the. And it seems like there's a lot. There isn't enough. There
yeah,
isn't.
We could have more.
Yeah.
Yeah. 100%. Even if it's like. I don't know, even if it's like rinky-dink and whatever, like, they're literally doing Bohem out of a coffee shop right now. Like,
and
it could be anything.
And
I can't wait, stay tuned for my dumpster turn dot.
Yeah.
We'll be doing turn dot and the dumpsters be in the alley behind my building. Yeah.
Nice.
I'm sorry. Well,
oh, I scared Moody by laughing. Oh, come back.
I think the other piece of that, too, is opening the door and opening... Like
literally,
putting something, not just having something as proof of concept, but literally opening the door and letting people in.
Yeah.
And letting people into what you're working
yes.
on. And Absolutely. To what your talents are. And that's how we're gonna get out of this like opera recession, if that's even a thing.
Yeah.
But I agree.
Not with 6 million productions of The Ring.
And if I
$6 million productions of The Ring.
One more mediocre Carmen, I'll die.
Yeah.
No, not even $6 million of The Ring. $6 million turntables.
Fuck the lyric. Fuck the lyric. Anyway, Josh, do you have any?
Yeah.
Plug,
oh, right.
Plug-a-lagoos?
Yeah. So I was gonna plug. So we started a chapter of New Brew here, which is an offshoot of Opera on Tap. It's been very successful in New York and San Francisco. I want to say is the other place.
I'm not sure.
Or Seattle. Somewhere in the West Coast. And what it is a group through Opera on Tap that helps create and foster new music, new vocal music. And so we have our first concert on May 16th at the Elbow Room, 8 p.m., $5 cover. And all the music is written after the year 2000. Living composers. We have some local composers. One of the composers is actually singing on the concert. Someone else is singing music that is set to the poetry that her mother wrote, which is really cool. I think it's going to be really... I'm really excited that we're starting it here. And there's evidence from even just the people that have been on this podcast that people in this town are kind of into the new music thing. Absolutely. And I'm just so excited that we're doing it. And we have a great roster of singers, and it's our first time out. So come support and like us on Facebook, New Brew Chicago.
Absolutely. And closer to, we'll have New Brew on.
Yeah,
no
yeah, yeah.
question.
It'll be, I'm excited about that.
Yeah.
Cool.
Well, we have to go because Daniel has a call to get to for Bohème tonight.
Sorry, Emma Cox. I'm going to be late.
Well, she won't know that till tomorrow. Yeah. So let's wrap it on up.
Cool. All right. Well, thank you all so much for listening. As always, I've been Daniel Johansson.
I continue to be Maureen Smith.
I'm that monolith from Space Odyssey.
Nailed it. We need to have a running tally of all the things that you are. If you want to keep up with what we're up to, there are so many ways to do that. There are going to be some new articles up in the next week, I feel.
Yay.
In the next couple weeks at least. So check out, keep an eye out for scopymag.com. You know, there's a list of podcast episodes, plenty of other stuff. If you want to keep up with us on social media, you can do that too. Please do. We're over at Facebook, although I'm kind of frustrated with Facebook conceptually because we've been like playing with the idea of promoting posts and it doesn't really work.
No, now I've been seeing them a lot more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good.
Cool. Well, yeah. Anyway, so if you, the thing is though too is like I'd like it to reach more people.
Right.
You know, not just the same. Not that I'm glad that you're
right. But who needs like, Josh? Right. No.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah. 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 So cool, guys. Check us out on Facebook. Share our posts. Tell your friends. It's a huge deal for us. Like us on Facebook, Scopy Magazine. That would be super helpful. You can also find us on Instagram and Twitter at Scopy Mag. We randomly tweet about Kendrick Lamar's album on Twitter. And then on Instagram, this week, we had a light week on podcast episodes. It was the week after Holy Week.
But we rounded it out really well with that conversation with Nat. Yeah, I loved that conversation. Have you listened yet?
No, because I haven't figured out how to listen to podcasts on my new phone. It's so but good. I will.
Yeah, if you have friends that use Android and they like podcasts, let us know how to set that up because we want to figure out how to do that best.
Yeah.
Because we don't. I don't think there's any infrastructure for
people. We will be trying to figure it out.
Yes.
Yeah. Besides like going to the Facebook page and clicking through to the Internet Archive link.
Or like going on our website or something.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Cool. Yeah.
And as always, I'm here to emphasize the importance of donations. We run on a shoestring budget. We are looking to expand our reach. We thought of a possible venue today that we could possibly do some stuff at this summer. If you know of a venue that would be down to have fairly regular performances, please let us know because we would love to make that happen.
Yeah, we want to set this, now that I'm coming out of my tech week and performance week, we want to figure out this summer residency and where we can do it and how we can
do it. I know for a fact that we are planning to have several performances in our apartment this summer.
Yeah.
And the way that you can gain admission to those performances is if you become a monthly donor. So we've said that there was an incentive to becoming a monthly donor. That's it. You can sit in our apartment, you can hang out with our cats, and you can watch bomb-ass performances from musicians and poets and whoever the fuck wants to come on and perform in our apartment. The door is open to you. Mm-hmm. So
and we'll record them, and there will be a live interview that you'll get to watch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it'll be great.
Yeah.
So head on over to scopymag.com, go to our About section, and become a monthly donor for as little as $5 a month. And you'll have free access to coming in. I'll probably make hummus or something.
Yeah.
There'll be like light refreshments.
Absolutely.
And bees.
And bees, most importantly.
Mostly bees.
Mostly bees.
Why am I invited on this?
Give a little, give a lot. And if you can't give, then listen, participate, and share.
Yep. Thanks again so much for listening. Go out and make
small
something.
Small things.